Denise Alexander Pyle. After more than 40 years as a successful lawyer in Birmingham, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit, faced family demands that brought her back to Marion, Indiana. And it was there, after limiting her legal practice to a minimum, that she elected to focus on her book that had long been incubating and with which we are going to discuss today. During the 2 years when Denise taught Sunday school in the 90s to 15-year-olds at a Reformed Jewish temple, her passion for Judeo-Christian ethics and living the Ten Commandments in a world gone awry crystallized. It culminated in her book, The Power of One, (0, 10), that is, A Guide to Living the Ten Commandments in Modern Times. The (0) is because she believes that even without the Ten Commandments, we have the golden rule to guide us and the underlying principles for all that we do. Her premise is that if we peel back the layers and deeply understand the meaning of each of the Ten Commandments on multiple levels, that we would truly recognize just how vital it is for us to adhere to them as our rules of the road for peaceful coexistence and survival on this planet, just as true today as it was in biblical times. Denise tries to incorporate these principles into her life. Community and public service is important to her. She has served as a planning commissioner for two different communities, a councilwoman, and on several nonprofit and professional boards. She has received the Circle of Hope Award for her service to families and victims of child abuse. So now it's with great pleasure that I introduce to you Denise Alexander Pyle. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Wynn.
How long did it take you to write your book?
Well, from start to finish, it's basically 5 years. The original book I wrote in 2010 over 4 or 5 weekends, while my husband was in Florida and I was still in Michigan practicing law. But to get it into a form where it got published, it was probably almost 5 years later before I got to editing it and spending another year till it actually was something people might want to read and that have it sound like a long sermon.
Well, I can commiserate with you because I've written and published 43 books. I started in 1980. I try to average one a year. Sometimes I don't do that. But at any rate, it's a long process, and you put your heart into your work, and it's when you finally birth it, it's quite remarkable. So
I can, well, even looking at the book today, I'll read it over again, and I don't remember writing it because it flowed from the heart from God.
Right, absolutely. What was the incentive to write it in the first place?
Well, as you said earlier, when I was teaching high school confirmation class, I saw the connection crystallize that the Ten Commandments were really the root of all the laws that govern us as humans. And I started seeing it in politics and political situations. When I saw something was a problem, I could tie it to one of the commandments. In my practice of law, advising clients, I started seeing the Ten Commandments underlying everything. And when you look at the world today and the divisiveness and all the problems, well, you can go back and see each of the commandments apply somewhere. And if we really saw how they applied and we started consciously implementing their meaning into our life, we could shift ourselves, shift our world, and become the best version of ourselves and the best version of this world in our lifetimes. It's about hope.
Not to put you on the spot, but do you have the Ten Commandments written down someplace?
Absolutely.
Could you go over them with our audience?
I would love to. The first one, and again, this is the more common version because the Catholic version is a little bit different. So, I am the Lord your God is one. Two, have no other gods before me. Three, do not misuse the name of God. Four, keep the Sabbath holy. Five, honor your father and mother. Six, do not kill. Seven, do not commit adultery. Eight, do not steal. Nine, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. And 10, do not covet your neighbor's belongings.
Now, those commandments were given to Moses a long time ago, right?
On Mount Sinai, if you believe the Bible, maybe an extraterrestrial presented them to a fledgling human population. But either way, they were given to us to be governed in contrast with Source.
Well, now, later, during the life of Jesus, he gave us a 11th commandment, as I remember, and it had to do with loving God and loving other people. And
well, he basically said there are two. Love the Lord with all your soul, with all your might. Love your neighbor as you would love yourself, basically. The two in Matthew, which is also 10 in binary numbers.
Right.
10 is 2.
So if you live just by that one, would all the rest of them fall into place naturally?
Well, I look at it, that's why I said the power of 10 and the power of the 1. To me, the overview is that you do everything with love. And I think that Jesus came to tell people, hey, you're getting too figurative into using the letter of the law for power and control. Without love, it doesn't matter. And you're not in love and service in this planet. And we need to shift that. And the Christ consciousness is bringing us into love of self, love of God, love of self, love of each other, which to me is the real Trinity. And so it became the overview. So if you're in service and in love, hey, you're not gonna go wrong. If you're in giving, if you're in self-love and the things that go with it in terms of balance with, you know, Source and each other, all those things are going to follow through because you're going to do it naturally. But you break down each one of those other commandments, and it really gives you the bones, so to speak, that hold the body being the love, the bones being the structure on which to apply that love, the tree of life.
And we may go into individual commandments later, but what would you say is the theme of your book?
Well, the theme is basically if we understood the meaning and learned how to apply them today, we would see beauty in all things. We would improve our own lives, which in turn would change the world. And, you know, if we're all doing the right thing, you know, we're so busy worried about how our governance would be, we would need less because we would be working in harmony with one another. So you always have to be vigilant against those who aren't in alignment with God, self, and each other. I mean, but beyond that, we wouldn't need much. I mean, it's that balance. Unfortunately, we're all not perfect human beings in harmony with God, self, and love. So, you know, there goes the rub.
That would be heaven on earth, but doesn't seem like we're moving.
Well, that's the goal. But that was the goal. I mean, to me, that's why we're here, to ultimately create heaven on earth and be co-creators with God and take that experience on a cellular level back with us when we turn into dust and our soul returns to the ethers.
Do you feel like that there's an urgency to get this message out and therefore your book?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, today, turn on any social media page and you see the turmoil, and really there's an answer for everything, whether it's common sense or, you know, looking to find common good to work together. It's really, you see so much divide and conquer for the benefit of fewer and fewer. And, you know, it's almost like they're turning the world into a house of Babel where we really can't communicate with one another anymore. And I'm hoping to, you know, send a message that it doesn't matter what your religious belief is, whether you're spiritual, it's finding the universal message that really we can all unite under and practice and say, aha, this makes sense.
Denise, who is your audience?
Everyone. I mean, it's whether you need a wake-up or just a tune-up. This book is really intended to be a universal, easy read. It's intended to be inspirational, self-help, and to provide some joy. And it's intended to be kept on your nightstand as a guide to a common sense way of life, you know, just to keep us, you know, moving forward every day in joy and being the best we can be.
That's kind of funny because someone asked me that question on an interview show once, and I said, well, practically everybody, because my book, Freedom from Addiction 3, talks to the most serious and most frequent of all medical, psychological, or spiritual problems in the world, which is addiction. But I found out after writing it that even though that was my intended audience, not all of those people out there got a copy of it. It's kind of funny.
Well, you never know. You know, books have a way of finding their way to the people who need them most. But I found that, you know, different people have read my book and they find something speaks to them, and some are very well studied in spiritual or religious teaching. Some aren't engaged in it at all, but yet it made sense to them and it struck a chord. So, yeah, we all get what we need. I think there's something for everyone in the book. It will find them.
Denise, I know that you think that the Ten Commandments are the roadmap for humanity. Why did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I think if you look at history and apply common sense, as you read each chapter, one commandment really follows the next and provides us the answer to understanding and living in our relationship with God, ourselves, each other, and our planet. And it really does take you on a yellow brick road path till we return to our home, which is in ourselves. The 10th commandment, do not covet your neighbor's belongings. It's really about finding contentment and joy in your own life, because we're each here for our own respective journey and not to mind that someone else's. And I think when you start from God and go down, you know, the first commandment, it really takes you step by step to all the tools you need to find that perfect pathway to yourself. I mean, you talk about addiction. I am the Lord your God. When we really talk about ourselves in relationship with God and our bodies as a temple and how we should honor what we put into them, feed your mind, feed your body, I mean, it really does, you know, understanding and loving yourself really is one of the keys to, you know, freeing yourself from addictive behavior that's self-destructive.
Right. Now, you have a background in the Jewish tradition, and you've married the biblical interpretation in your work with the Kabbalah. Most people don't know what the Kabbalah is. Would you explain?
Well, Kabbalah is an ancient Jewish wisdom that explains the eternal laws of how spiritual energy moves through the cosmos. What it really is religious quantum physics. It's, and, you know, almost every ancient religion has their secret teachings that were kept for those who really were scholarly and who could delve into the more unseen realm, so to speak. They say Moses actually stole the Kabbalah from the Egyptians, but whether that's true, I don't know. But it really is the spiritual framework that defines why we are here. And it's depicted by the Tree of Life, which contains 10 spheres, or they call them spherot, that each has an attribute assigned to it that represents the world and its inhabitants. And as you go from heaven to earth on the Tree of Life, it's the correlation of, you know, your evolution to becoming the best version of yourself in this planet, much like the Ten Commandments. And they really do coincide with one another. And actually, if you go through the Kabbalah and this Tree of Life, the Tarot is based upon the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. There are 22 connected paths on the Tree of Life. They correlate with the 22 paths in the Tarot deck. And again, it's really metaphysical explanations of, you know, of the structure of humanity and the spiritual realms in this, in the physical, in connection with it to the physical realm. So, I mean, most Jewish people don't study it. Now it's become very mainstream. You've seen Kabbalah with a Q, because there's a belief that these teachings are really necessary to enlighten the masses as a whole. So we begin to understand how our thoughts, our actions really do change the way, you know, we, the world evolves, so that we can save ourselves before we destroy ourselves?
Well, kind of hone down on the term Tree of Life and explain it to me and to our listeners today. What exactly is the Tree of Life?
Well, again, it really is the structural symbol. It looks, if you were to draw it, it looks like a Jacob's ladder. It has a circle on top and a circle on the bottom. And then there are circles going back, and it creates like a structure. And it it represents the spiritual structure of the universe and our involvement. So it's a connectedness. It's the physical depiction of the spiritual realm. And the Bible, at least the Torah, the original five books of Moses, the Ten Commandments are both often referred to as the Tree of Life as well, because they're living interpretations of the physical or spiritual structure of the universe. So it's really the metaphysical teachings of the Judeo-Christian faith.
Well,
and it's depicted structurally, but it's to show us what we evolved from.
Well, as an artist, I've made what is called the Tree of Life as a pendant a number of times, and I didn't know the metaphysical background to it, but it's a beautiful looking symbol.
Well, if you notice, I don't want to get out of order for your questions, but I painted the cover of my book and put the top half of the Tree of Life to represent the first five commandments on one side of a set of tablets, and I put the bottom five spheres and the bottom half of the Tree of Life on the left side because they coincide with those commandments. And then if you look in the picture on the cover of the book, if you drew an imaginary line between the dots, there was a Star of David. On the bottom half, if you drew a line through the dots, you got a cross. So I thought it was very interesting that there, and symbolic, how the two tied together.
Well, I'm looking at the cover of your book right now, and I noticed that there are circles and they are different colors, except that it looks like two of them are white or off-white. Any significance there?
No, actually, other than my painting, it's the white is supposed to be the top one. The one on the side is really supposed to be more like silver. So it's there is in most, or more like a in most of the, there's a stone that is supposed to represent the color of each of the spheres, and it has and does have a symbolism. As we speak right now, I can't give you the exact color correlation, except it's not insignificant that the most spiritual, the first sphere out at top is white, it's pure, it's white light, and the one representing foundation is earthen colored, so.
Okay. So, we've talked about some of the metaphysics and spiritual connections, but is there any other thing that we haven't talked about that you think is important?
Well, I think that, again, you know, I come from a Judeo-Christian background. I can describe myself as a New Way Jew. I've been interested in metaphysics since I'm 14. I was raised Jewish, but I also accept Jesus. My husband's Quaker. I can find God anywhere. And I believe that most of the religious doctrines throughout our planet that unfortunately tend to separate us more than unite us are founded on similar beliefs that, you know, consciousness is endowed with a, you know, that basically the universe is endowed with a consciousness of its own kind on its own place of perception, and that we all are connected with it and evolve from it and are here to co-create with it. And it's just learning how to use those tools that were given to us, but use them in with light, because we're light beings and we're here to do positive things, but unfortunately we're made of matter. So it's how do we choose light over darkness, because the temptation to, you know, do things that aren't necessarily in our highest good is always there. So it's, these are the rules. How we choose light over darkness is how I like to define it.
The concepts that you and I have been talking about, do you feel like that there's a need to modernize them, considering what's going on in the world and the technical advances that are coming every day?
Absolutely, because people think of the Bible. It's old-fashioned. It was written for archaic times. The laws that were given to the people in the desert don't apply today. You know, for example, kosher laws, don't eat pork. Well, they had trichinosis, they didn't know what it was, so, you know, they just didn't eat it. You know, but there are other meanings for things, you know, why there were certain disciplines created, and we have to start looking at things. It's how do we create balance in a planet that we coexist with other living creatures, and we have a stewardship to keep it and improve it for the next generation. And right now, I'm not confident that we're doing a very good job of making this planet inhabitable and sustainable for the generations to come after us.
Yeah, that is a real concern, isn't it?
And we have the ability to change. We, at any moment, we can change it, but we have to recognize, like a river, you know, the river has to flow so that we can each take a drink out of it and leave enough downriver for somebody else to drink. But if somebody dams up the river and pours it so that nobody else can share it, everything downriver dries up and dissipates. There's enough, but if you keep it moving, it'll replenish itself with the rains, and there'll be enough to go around. The exception, obviously, is a beaver creates a dam, and all of the creatures now form a nice eco-culture around the lake because they're sharing. But I'm saying, but we're not doing what we can to create that eco-culture around the lake. There's so much hoarding, and it needs to flow. There's plenty for people who are creative to have more. I don't believe that people shouldn't be, I believe people should be rewarded for extra efforts. I do believe that we need incentives to create, but I also think in the same way, we also have a duty to give back. And I believe the more I tend to give in so many ways, and not just materially, but just of myself, I get more. You know, to me, it just, I get replenished in so many ways. And people are so afraid of not having. I believe in the principle of hand scaffold. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. So we're always giving, and it's that, it's about giving and receiving, not taking. There's a difference. It's okay to receive. It's, you know, but it's not okay to take without permission. And that goes back to the Ten Commandments, do not steal.
So thinking about one of the worldwide global problems that we have, which is hunger, starvation, not having enough food to eat. This really is not a problem of there not being enough food. It's a problem of distribution of that food, is it not?
Well, look what just happened this week in Venezuela. People were killed trying to keep humanitarian aid coming in to feed a population that the government didn't want. Years ago in, I think it was Somalia, the food was rotting on the piers because, you know, tyrannical governments believe the best way to control a population is to starve them. So, you know, it's about power and control. We need to recognize that if we're in a planet based on love and not fear, that we can share and we can create, you know, and we can be, we have creative talent. Look at all the technology we've had to grow food. But we have to recognize we are living in harmony in a planet that in and of itself is a body. And if it doesn't like what we're doing, yeah, we become the cancer and it can emit germs and diseases and things to get rid of us as antibodies. So we really need to recognize that we are symbiotic with everything. And that we don't have to be fearful of not having enough so that we have to hoard it. It's how we share and find balance. It's all about the balance.
Well, at the end of your book, after you've talked about the Ten Commandments and explained them, you include what you call commitments. And would you explain that, please?
I will. The commitments are basically exercises to help us, and they're self-directed, to help us anchor the principle into our day-to-day life. They're queries, they're tasks, and they're intended to give us insights so that when we aren't practicing the Ten Commandments, we can see where by making just a minor change, we can positively shift our long-established patterns and come up with ideas of our own. I mean, they're meant to be stimulation to say, okay, I can do this, and see how that commandment shifts. Well, what other things could I do that anchor the principle of this planet into my life?
You have 10 commandments that you talk about. I'm going to pick out one because we don't have time to pick out all of them to talk about. It's chapter 7, Do Not Commit Adultery. Would you explain what adultery is and why that was important enough to make it a commandment?
Well, I mean, adultery in modern times is defined as having sexual relationships with someone who is not your spouse. But there's nowhere are you commanded that you are going to be in a monogamous relationship all your life with some person. So obviously, the meaning is about how do we stay pure in thought and deed and honor the promises and commitments we make to ourselves and to other people so that we can build trust in the world? I mean, that's how I view adultery. It's really, it coincides with the Tree of Life fear that means victory. I mean, this is about setting our goals, making our promises, making our relationships with people, partnerships, in such a manner that we discern things that we can follow through with and do the right thing. I mean, it's really about doing the things in our life that we have the courage to follow through with and not get into things or make promises to people or ourselves that we aren't willing to keep.
So back when that commandment was given, you said sexual relations. Was that just intercourse, or was it other types of sexual relations that you think God had in mind?
I think back in those times, I think all other forms of sexual relations other than intercourse and kissing were probably, you know, you got stoned if you got caught doing. But I think that it's really defined about, first of all, there was a need to have the men protect the women and to have a population grow. So I think there was a meaning involved that...
We had, unfortunately, a disruption of service from AT&T, but now we're back online, and we're going to start back to finish our discussion. So, Denise, can you bring us back to where you were at when the telephone went down?
I sure can. We were talking about adultery and, you know, why that commandment was given to us. And I think that if you look at the biblical time, they lived as a community traveling in the desert. They were, the men were the protectors. The women kind of were separated. They needed the population to continue to grow. So I think it was given to try and structure a population that sort of worked as a community and took care of one another and kept the families pure so that, you know, that you would continue to evolve without, you know, with new family strains and not intermarriage, you know, interrelationship. I think it was a purity. They were trying to keep the lines of pure from a physical standpoint. But I think they also were trying to create a structure that was beyond their time. I think all rules are given to us to apply in their time, but also to evolve as the population ages. Our own Constitution is a perfect example. The people who wrote it knew at the time that it was limited. For example, slavery. They discussed it, but they knew it. They couldn't create a constitution that would approve it in their time. So the rules evolve as the population evolves. And so therefore, we really have to look at the commandments and say in modern times, we have to evolve them as to their application today because they're still based on universal truth principles. They are still, you know, the underlying score, the prime number, so to speak, of the physical structure of the universe.
Okay, a quick question. Back then, it was more a physical thing, talking about adultery because the family unit. And today, we can have emotional and also spiritual type of problems in addition to the physical part? Do you think that's just as important for us to...
Absolutely. I've been a divorce attorney for 42 plus years. And trust me, how many times said, well, I didn't cheat on my spouse, but actually they did because the intimacy of the relationship was destroyed. And by the confidences being shared outside of the relationship, it destroys the bond that ties. My spouse is my best friend. He always has my back. He walks the walk. And when you have that in a relationship and you've had something different, you see how important it is to have someone who is your best friend, partner, the wind beneath your wings. And to me, that's the commitment we make when we get into a relationship if we want it to work.
Right. We've been talking today with Denise Alexander Powell. Her book is called The Power of One, Power of Ten. So, Denise, it's been great to have you on the program. I know you've got another program to go to right now, so we're going to end this one. But thank you so much for being on the program, and I want to...
Lynn, thank you so much for having me. You are such an inspiration. I listened to some of your recordings, and wow, you just have been there for so many people.
Oh, thank you, Denise. I appreciate that. Do you want them to go to Amazon to get your book or something else or what?
No, Amazon works. You can get it through Amazon.com, Kindle, my website, www.denisealexanderkyle.com. I just hope people will, you know, will buy the book, but most importantly, I hope people will abide by the book, because I really think it is something wonderful for us all if we all live by these precepts.
Well, thanks again, Denise.